Catcher in his day, though.
I guess he was.
Yeah.
He was a nice guy, as far as I'm concerned, and everybody seemed to like him. But all of a sudden, right out of the dark, and then they called Charlie Grimm in from Milwaukee, took his place. And Charlie Grimm managed the ball club all the time I was there.
Well, 42, you had a pretty good year. You win 5 and lose 6. You were in 33 games, and you started 14. You had an ERA of 3.01. That's your best ERA year, was 42. And I don't remember where you finished that year. I know the Cardinals won the pennant in 42.
Yeah. Cardinals had a good ball club then.
They had some of their greatest, yeah.
That's right.
Cooper and Johnny Hop and Enos Slaughter.
Well, they had a good ball club, but Sam Musial, too, was there.
Who was the toughest guy you ever hit against?
Sam Musial, that's why I brought his name up. Claude Passon and I used to talk how the heck to pitch. We'd change up on him, we'd throw high, throw low, and he'd still get the base hits. He was just a good hitter.
Yeah.
You couldn't fool him. And a nice guy on top of that.
Who are some of the guys on your Cub team that you hung out with? Besides Claude Passot, you roomed with Passot one year.
Yes,
right?
And Cavaretto.
You roomed with Cavaretto.
Stan Hack, Bill Nicholson.
There were some good hitters on that team, right?
Yes, there was. Of course, Hack was on his way down. I mean, Bill Jurgis had gone. Billy Herman had gone.
Yeah.
Went to Dodgers. We had a good ball club, but we just couldn't seem to get going for some reason or another.
Yeah.
I started that season, I think, in... I'm jumping up on you now. That was in 44. I pitched the second ball game of the season, and I pitched against... what was a converted third baseman?
Bucky Walters.
Bucky Walters. I pitched again, and he beat me 3-2. Hmm. And finally... Well, Wilson was there. I'd won one ball game and lost 6. Hmm. And Charlie Grimm came over, and I wound up the season with winning 8 and losing 4. So I had 9-10, I think, that year in 44. That was the best year I had up there.
Yeah. You had a good ERA that year, too. You had 3.13.
Yeah. That was a year that I pitched that one hitter. I missed the Hall of Fame.
Oh, no kidding. Who'd you throw against?
Early. Pitcher by name Early.
And
he pitched a four hitter. It was against the Braves.
Boston Braves. And who got the hit? A lumpy or a good hitter?
Tommy Holmes.
He was one of the best.
Well,
he hit over 300 consistently. He had the longest hitting streak for a long time. He had 44 straight games.
He was a good hitter, I know that.
Yeah.
But it was a little Texas leaguer that just dropped in there. And that's what happens. I mean,
But the game of inches.
Andy Pafko come up in the last of the ninth and hit a home run
and win
the ball game. I took Andy out and bought him a big steak that night.
Now, he was a pretty good ball player.
Yes, he was. Very good.
Yeah, it's amazing you can come that close to throwing a no-hitter. And
that's the way life is.
That's the way life is, yeah. Come close. Well, they say it's a game of inches, and it sure was.
Yep.
You played in a lot of the parks, of course, American and National both. Did you have any park you liked to pitch in, pitcher-friendly park?
A lot of them were old parks, and they had either a short right field or left field, you know, like the Giants. They had the pole grounds, and I don't think it was 240 feet to right field. And go back to Fenway Park, they said it was 200 and some feet. We took a... Plasso and I got out there with a tape measure and to the bottom of the left field fence was 199 feet. But they had that big fence up there, too, and the screen on top of that.
Yeah.
But a pop fly hit the wall or go out of there.
Well, they always say that old Washington Senator field was a big one, long one.
It was.
A lot of pitchers like
to pitch
there.
So was the Philadelphia ball. I mean, they had well evened up fences, you know.
Well, did you like pitching in those big ones where they hit that long fly ball
and
the guy goes back on his horse and catches it?
Yeah. No.
Did you have a favorite umpire or
Jocko Conlon.
Jocko Conlon.
Yeah. He was my favorite in those days. And Beans Reardon was another one.
What did you like about them? They were sharp and on
you could holler a little bit at them if you thought they'd miss a strike or something like that, and they'd come back with some wisecrack, you know. And a lot of fellows, like Major Kurth, you say anything to him, you was gone.
Right out of there.
The back of his neck would start swelling and getting red.
Yeah.
He knew you was gone.
Did you ever get thrown out of a ball game?
Once, in Chicago. I had nothing to do with it. I forget what it was now, but anyway, they had to run somebody. And I'd pitched the day before, so they come over and looked down the bench and pointed a finger at me, you're out of here. So I went up in the clubhouse. But that's the only time I ever got thrown out.
Well, that showed a lot of courtesy on that umpire's part, whoever he was. You guys all travel on the train then. There wasn't any airplane. Well, it was during the war a lot of that time, too. You travel on the train.
All trains. Yeah. A lot of times we travel in coaches. Uh-huh. Before the war, we had three separate cars, the press and the management and the
ball players in one.
Well, the management and the press would be up one, and then the ball players would be in the last two.
Uh-huh.
And we never slept in an upper. Everything was a lower.
Oh, really? So the uppers just went empty, huh?
That's right. And we'd always put us right next to the baggage car. So we'd sit there in our shorts and play cards and, you know, kind of entertain ourselves a little bit.
Yeah. Well, they say that there was so much baseball talked on the train in those days, and that's, of course, another thing that's missing in today's baseball. They fly, and they don't have time to visit.
Well, they're counting their money now.
Yeah. Calling their stockbroker on their cellular phone. Did you like traveling? Did you like that kind of life?
Oh, yeah. It was very interesting. I've never been out of the state of California, you know, until I went back to Muskogee.
Well, when you travel around like that, did you go to museums and historical places or the top of the Empire State Building?
I've been to top of the Empire State, and I'd go to
Statue
museums. I used to go see the Rockettes in New York. I thought they were great.
Yeah, I've always wanted to see them.
Yeah, they were great. And then Charlie Grimm's uncle run the museum there in St. Louis, and we'd go there and he'd show us around.
Uh-huh.
We went. Of course, we had a lot of time to kill if we played a night ball game.
Yeah.
But most of all, the big leagues then were all daylight.
Yeah, especially during the war, I guess they knocked out night games completely there on the East Coast.
Because they'd reflect out into the ocean. They figured that they could get a bounce off of them or something, I guess.
Uh-huh. Who did you room with on the road? I think I asked you this before. You mentioned Paso and
Cabaretta. There's probably two or three others that I roomed with, but I don't recall right now.
What number did you wear?
20.
You always wore 20?
Yeah.
Whenever you could
get it.
Did you just happen to pick it, or?
No, I got lucky when I had it, so I kind of held on.
Superstitions. Did you have any other superstitions, or was that?
Not really.
You didn't step on the line, or you?
I guess there was some, but I don't remember now. But
if you
did something and won, you always tried to do the same thing
next
time.
Yeah. But was there any special place you hung out after a ball game, or did everybody kind of hang out together, or you had three or four different buddies?
Usually you'd stop someplace maybe and have a beer and then go back to the hotel and sit around the hotel until it was time for dinner. And then after dinner, you'd go up to your room and read or listen to the radio. Or they didn't have televisions then.
Yeah.
Listen to the radio and read. But all you could do, unless you took a walk.
When I played, a lot of guys would go to a movie. And then some guys said, you can't go to a movie. It's going to bother your eyes.
Yeah. I did the same thing in the Coast League. I mean, where we played so much night ball, you'd go see a show in the afternoon, matinee, because, I mean, it'd make a long day out of it.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, a lot of guys played pool when I was playing ball, too. In the minor leagues.
That's
right. A lot of guys hung out around the pool alley. Pool, or not pool alley, what do they call it?
Pool hall.
Pool hall, yeah.
Yeah. anything to pass the time. Did a lot of walking. You went to a lot of, saw a lot of things.
Well, what do you think's the biggest difference in Major League Baseball today? I mean, there's a lot of them.
Well, one thing is the ball's much livelier. And if a pitcher makes mistakes out of the ballpark, you know, I think the pitching, I think, has to be much better today than it was, because, like I say, you make a mistake and they hit it out of the ballpark.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, the money's better today than it was
In
those days.
Sure is, yeah.
But the most money I ever made is about $14,000 in the big leagues.
That was with the Cubs, probably.
Yeah, And Coast League, you got all the way from maybe $600 to $1,000. There was no big salaries then.
Well, we got up to 1944, and then, of course, as probably every Cub fan knows, 1945, the Cubs won the pennant.
That's
bad news for you.
I was in the Army.
You got drafted, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. The Cubs were nice enough to send me $250 out of the World Series. That was the biggest $250. Because I was a buck private in the Army, I wasn't getting about $14 a month, I think, for the time they took off for my family and my wife.
That was really nice of the Cubs to do that.
It was, and I appreciate it.
Because actually, you weren't with them at all in 1945 at all. You didn't even go to spring training.
No, the entire year I went in
service.
December and got out, and I don't know what time it was in 45. It was in just about a year, I guess.
Yeah.
I was up at Fort Lewis, spent all the time up there, and of course I played on the Fort Lewis ball club.
Were there any other major leaguers on that ball team?
It was D'Alessandro.
Oh, Dominic D'Alessandro. He played with him in the Cubs, too.
Tommy Heath.
Oh, yeah.
Catcher.
Catcher, yeah. Managed the Seals later on.
That's right. And there was two or three others, but right now, offhand, it's been so long ago, I can't remember.
Uh-huh.
But if you give me a little time, I'll think about it.
Well, after the service, then you got out, and you went with the Cubs again in 46. Did you go to spring training with the Cubs, or did you go to minor league?
And went to spring training with the Cubs.
Uh-huh.
We trained in Catalina.
Oh, you did. That must have been quite an experience.
It was.
Didn't Wrigley own that whole
Wrigley
island?
Wrigley owned the island, and he had a cattle ranch on the back end, and they had a fellow by the name of Jack White that was in charge of the cattle ranch, and my uncle worked for Wrigley, so they were good buddies. He would come down and pick me up at night, and we'd go up to the ranch and barbecue and have a few beers.
Uh-huh.
And then we'd take his pickup and go out at night, and there was a lot of wild hogs. And we'd shoot those hogs, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they wouldn't let us off the pickup. We crippled one by, he'd say, you stay in the pickup, and he had a six-shooter, and he'd go out and finish the hog off, or he'd get away or something, and they had a bird aviary there in Catalina, and would take the meat down, and they'd give it to the birds.
Oh.
And
so they were too tough or wild or
well, they
to
weren't
eat.
Too
people
tough or wild, but what were you going to do with them, you know? I mean, some of them are pretty good size. Some of them are pretty strong, pretty old.
Thought maybe they'd bake them for you for a
well, we did have one down
team.
At the St. Catherine Hotel. That's where we stayed.
Uh-huh.
I understand it's torn down now. But they baked a pig up for us down there, and it was real good.
Uh-huh. You were with the Cubs during the war, and you mentioned an incident earlier where there was some a news bulletin came over that the United States was being attacked.
I was rubbing with a cabaret at the St. Catherine Hotel, and one of us had left the light on in the bathroom. You had to turn the lights off, you know, so you'd have complete
darkness. Blackout,
So they called up from the desk and said, please turn your light off in the bathroom. Los Angeles is being attacked. So Phil and I got up and went out on the wharf and looked over toward L.A., down around Wilmington and South L.A. there, and it looked like a big fireworks going up, rockets and everything going up, you know. So nothing more was said about it until I found out later that they were firing on their own aircraft.
Oh, really?
My uncle of mine saw one of them that was shot down, but nothing was ever said about it.
So our planes were flying up there, and they mistook them for Japanese
enemy planes.
And
Japanese planes,
firing
right.
At.
Right.
You know, that was kind of scary.
I don't think it ever come out. Probably never will, you know.
Well, who do you think Well, this is probably too easy. Who's the best ball player you ever played with?
You ever played with?
Yeah.
Oh, Ted Williams.
Ted Williams.
Yeah, all-around ball player. Uh-huh. But they had a lot of them. Jimmy Fox, Bobby Doerr, Joe Cronin, Jim Tabor, Don DiMaggio. I mean, you know.
Yeah, the Red Sox were a powerful
team.
It just seemed like the Yankees were always just...
Yankees had a better pitch, and they had good catching with Bill Dickey, too. I give Bill Dickey a lot of credit for the Yankees.
That's true, yeah.
He handled those pitchers like a rocking horse. I mean, he really handled the pitchers good, and like I say, I give credit for the Yankees part of it with Bill Dickey. I mean, being responsible for handling the pitcher.
Yeah, that's true.
And of course, they were good pitchers, too. I mean...
it's just like a manager. You got to have a...
You got to have a ball club to
work with.
To work with.
Yeah. You play with some good hitters, both the Red Sox. It is funny, you mentioned earlier that you always had good hitting, but you didn't have good pitching. Same way with the Cards. You had Bill Nicholson was a great hitter.
Bill was a good hitter. Pascoe was a good hitter.
You remember a guy named Lou Novikoff?
Oh, Lou Novikoff, yes. He was with a ball club, and they called him the Mad Russian.
Yeah.
He could hit the ball real good in the minors, but he went to the majors, he couldn't hit because he was a wild ball hitter. You'd throw a ball a foot over his head, and he'd jump up and hit it.
No kidding.
And the only way to pitch him is he couldn't hit the ball. It was right down the middle, and they got wise to him, you know, and that's where they pitched him. And he didn't hit at all in the majors.
Well, probably, like you say, the major league pitchers had too good a control.
That's right. That's right. That's
the minor leaguers were throwing it wild, and he was jumping on. Yeah, he was a minor league star that never really made it.
The Mad Russian.
Mad Russian. He played in that Southern California. He played for L.A. Cubs.
That's right. Played for L.A. I played against him when I was with Hollywood. I remember that.
Well, Charlie Grimm was your manager. Who's the manager in the Red Sox? Joe Cronin. So you played for Joe Cronin, Charlie Grimm, Jim Wilson, and
that was
about
it.
In the major leagues, yeah. Well, that about finishes your major league career then in 46. You went there in spring of 46, and you must not have lasted too long.
I didn't. They sent me to L.A.
They sent you to L.A.
In 46, and I was with L.A. in 47, I hurt my arm, and they released me, and I signed on with Portland. I stayed with Portland through 1956, and I retired and got out of it.
Well, you know, there's a question that says, how did you know you were done playing baseball? To me, I mean, the reason you know you're done is because you either, if you were hitting, you weren't getting any hits, or if you were a pitcher, you weren't getting anybody out.
You know, it's a funny thing. When you're all through, you hate to admit it. You know?
Yeah.
You hate to give up. You hate to get out of that action. But you know.
Yeah.
You just don't get starts and so forth. Yeah.
But then you ever, this happened to me. I don't know what happened to other guys. But for a year or two or 5 years later, sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night or you're dreaming or something. You think, geez, they called me back or I got another chance.
That's right.
Did that ever happen to you?
That's right, I have. I still dream about baseball once in a while.
Yeah.
Baseball was good to me. I can't say that it wasn't.
Yeah.
But I'd like to play 1 year now, and then I'd call it quits.
Yes. You make a million or two, put in the bank. I noticed you have a ring there on your finger. I've never asked you about
it. It's
a gold ring.
L.A. ring, 47.
That's Los Angeles.
The championship.
Oh, 1947 Pacific Coast League Championship. It's a beautiful gold ring. It's got cross bats with a diamond in the diamonds in the shape of a diamond. It's a great, great ring.
We played the Seals one game playoff for the championship.
Oh, is that right? Who was managing you then in 47?
Well, time.
Time out. The manager of the Angels the year won the pennant was who?
Bill Kelly.
Bill Kelly. And you must have had some good ball players on that team to win it, because that Coast League was really tough in those days.
Yes, it was. We had Cliff Chambers, one of the pitchers.
Oh, yeah, he's a left-hander.
Left-hander.
A lot of kids went from that Angels.
Red Lynn, Red Adams.
Yeah.
I'm going back a long ways now.
Yeah, we're talking almost 50 years. Almost 50.
That's right.
Well, that's the end of this side of the tape, just about. Why don't I finish up this side, and then we'll finish you off in the minor leagues. We'll take a little break now.
All right.
After you finished a season in L.A. in 1947, then what'd you do?
Well, I went to spring training with L.A. the next year. I held out, and I hurt my arm in spring training, and they released me, and I went up to Portland. And I was with Portland 48, 49, through 56, my last year in baseball. And the last 3 years up there, I was coach for the Portland Ball Club.
Oh, did you pitch any then at all?
Outside of that one ball game I was telling you about earlier, I asked Clay Hopper to let me slap up a ball game to save a pitcher.
Because you were a coach and you weren't
active. Yeah, I wasn't active. So I come out to the ballpark the next day and he said, I'll put you on the active list. You're pitching against San Diego tomorrow. So the next night I came in, the ninth inning was 1-1.
You pitched the whole nine? You
pitched the whole ball game. Uh-huh. And it was the ninth inning. We were going into the tenth inning. I couldn't make it. I come in and I said, I can't make it. No way will I go back there. Oh, I was hurting.
Uh-huh.
And we had a little second baseman by the name of Buzinski that he had a home run in the ninth inning, and I beat San Diego 2-1. I never volunteered anymore after that, I'll tell you.
Well, Buzinski, I think, went up with somebody.
Yes, he did.
Played with Brooklyn. Or
right.
The old Brooklyn Dodgers, second baseman. You would... So then you stayed with Portland then until 56.
56, and I retired out of baseball then.
Well, you said Clay Hopper was your manager. Wasn't there a guy named Bill Sweeney that managed up about that time?
Yes, he was there before Clay Hopper. And then he went up to Seattle, and he came back to Portland in 56. And...
What did you think of Sweeney as a manager?
I think he was the best manager I ever played for.
Uh-huh.
I thought a lot of him. He was, on the field, he was tough, but off the field, he was the nicest guy in the world. You wouldn't think there was two guys that could be the same for one guy. But he was a heck of a nice guy, and he knew baseball, but he knew ball players, too. He knew human nature. He'd never ball ball player out in front of anybody. He'd get him aside or something, and if they had it coming, and ball him out.
Yeah, and didn't embarrass him.
Yeah, right.
An interesting point, that Clay Hopper was your manager. Wasn't he Jackie Robinson's first manager
at
Montreal?
That's right. I played a little ball for Clay. I think he was 2 years in Portland. Well, I went up as a coach when he joined the ball club. Yes, he, Vance Rickey picked him from Greenwood, Mississippi to go up to Montreal, and Jackie Robinson broke in with him, and also Campanella.
Oh.
And he said there was no doubt that Jackie was a great ball player. He said, and Campanella was a good ball player. And he said that Campanella was a happy-go-lucky guy, and Jackie was serious. And fellas used to hang around Campanella, listen to him talk and pop off, you know, how it happens in the clubhouse.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And Jackie was always serious. He never could loosen up. And I think that had a lot to do later on for him dying.
His early death.
Early death, because he tried his best. And Clay said he was one of the greatest ball players he ever handled, and he was in the Brooklyn organization for a number of years.
Yeah, he was, of course, probably very instrumental in seeing that Robinson made it to the major leagues.
Cause that's right.
He could have mishandled him very
easily. That's right. No, Clay wasn't that way, but they picked him out of Greenwood, Mississippi. Clay was from Greenwood, Mississippi, but in the South. Clay was a good manager. Then I think that he was a little hurt when he didn't get the job managing the Brooklyn Ball Club.
Yeah, he had could have had a chance there,
because
that's when they were fooling around with Bert Shaw, and
then
they fired Leo Durocher, and there were openings there at one
time. Well, he mentioned the fact to me that he was a little disappointed that he didn't get a shot at it, you know.
Uh-huh.
Anyway. But I think he would have done a good job for him. He wound up being sick. He had colon cancer, and it kind of knocked him down quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
And I got to, a lot of times he couldn't come to the ballpark, and I got a chance to manage the ball club a few times.
So you were
I really enjoyed it. I mean, and I always come back into the hotel room and go up to his room, you know.
And let him know.
And let him know, and he'd say, well, you did everything just like I would done to make you feel good.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Well, did you ever think about getting into managing?
Well,
I never got the chance.
I think I would have been manager of the Portland Ball Club, because Bill Sweeney came there in 57, and the second week of the season, he died in San Diego with an ulcer.
Uh-huh.
And they came and asked me if I could get 2 weeks leave of absence until they could get a manager and manage the ball club after I'd left the ball club. And who knows what would happen.
But yeah.
No, I think it would have been fun. I knew baseball. I'd been in long enough. And I think I knew the ball players.
Well, a lot of pitchers became managers.
Yeah.
Although lately it's been a lot of middle infielders.
Yeah.
Like Sparky Anderson. And
well, baseball, like I say, was good to me,
Dwayne.
I mean, I was just a country boy, a hick boy. You know, I hadn't been out of Sutter County probably. And I got to see a lot of the world. In fact, I think I was in 46 of the 48 states here, and went to Cuba. All the big towns we were in, spring training, we barnstormed through a lot of small towns.
Uh-huh.
Got to see a lot of the country.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Baseball is an experience.
That's right.
Experience.
And I'll say one thing. I like it here in Reno about as well as any place that I've ever been.
No kidding.
Well, 15 minutes you can, or 20 minutes you can be up in the snow, and you go the other way, you can be out in the desert, and you have your seasons here, and they're not really rough. We're getting a little cold snap now and some weather, but you'll have to have the weather, I mean, in order to get by with getting enough snow up there on top. Yeah. No, I love it here.
Do you see any of the guys you played with at all? Do you keep in touch with any of them?
Wally Westlake, I see him once in a while.
Yeah, he played with Pittsburgh for quite a while, and closely in Cleveland.
Not too many of them.
Uh-huh.
No, I would like to meet Williams down in Carson City.
He's a
great ball player today. I think he's one of the best.
Do you follow baseball much?
Oh yes.
Yeah.
I never miss a ball game.
You read the box scores and.
Oh yes, follow the thing. It's a funny thing though. I don't like to go to. I go to hear the Silver Sox, but I don't like to go to a big league ball game because you're fighting the crowds, you know.
Yeah.
And one thing about, we'd have a big crowd by the time we took our showers and cleaned up and had a bottle of beer after the ball game, you'd come out and everybody'd be gone.
That's right.
But not if you get up in the stands, the ball game's over, you start out there.
Yeah, you see people start leaving 2-3 innings before the game is over.
You got to walk a half a mile to get your car, or,
yeah.
You know, that's, I don't know, maybe I'm looking at, I'm not saying I wouldn't, I would. I went to a few ball games in Candlestick Park, and I've been to a few ball games in Dodger Stadium.
Uh-huh.
I still, it's still in my blood. I miss when spring training comes around. That's what you're really missing.
Well, we'll have to go play catch when it warms up a little bit.
I don't know whether I'd have to bounce it up to you now.
Do you have any of your gloves left or uniform?
No. I used to spend a couple of months down in Mexico. And the kids down there all play baseball.
Uh-huh.
So I took a couple of gloves and bats and stuff, the hats and coats I had. I took it down and I gave it to the Mexican kids.
Yeah.
In fact, there was a fellow called me here a couple of days ago and wanted to know if I had any of that stuff left. He called me from Florida.
Oh, he wanted to buy it or something?
Yeah. And I told him, well, I got some pictures, but I said, I took all my stuff to Mexico. And I told him about this ring. And he said, well, is it worn much? I said, no. He said, I'll give you $700 for it right over the phone, you know. I wouldn't part it for $10,000,
yeah.
You know. Of course, everybody's got their price, but yeah. I mean, it means a lot to me.
Well, those diamonds got to be worth a lot of money, too.
Oh, sure.
Not even counting the sentimental value is worth more
than
anything.
Sure, it's 14 karat gold.
Yeah, it's too bad the Cubs, they give you that $250. They should have given you a World Series ring. That would have really been.
Oh, that would have been great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's where the ball bounces.
Yeah. But and Wrigley was owner then, I guess. And
yes.
He's long dead, so we can't write
him. That's right.
I don't know if you want to tell this. I don't know if you want to tell this story or not, but you were telling me earlier about when Joe Cronin was managing you, 1 year in 40.
Yes, we were playing the Athletics, and there was two men out, and there was a man on first, or on second base, and Joe Cronin come in and asked me, well, I shouldn't walk. Sam Chapman, I think, was a hitter, and I talked him out of it. And
You wanted to pitch to him because you could always get
him. I wanted to pitch to him, and I did pitch to him, and he hit one out of the ballpark, and I think that had a lot to do with him not being with the Red Sox.
Joe Cronin didn't like that.
No, not a bit. Kind of showed him up, too, I think.
Yeah. Well, how about Charlie Grimm? He's supposed to be Jolly Charlie Grimm. Fun and games?
He was a funny guy on the bases, you know. I mean, coaching.
Uh-huh.
But Charlie was a good guy. I mean,
he was baseball smart, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't he? Yeah. Charlie was, well, he was managing up at Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
And he bought the ball club. And that was before Bill Veeck went to Cleveland and the Browns.
Oh, uh-huh.
And then they sold out, I guess, to the Braves. Didn't the Braves?
Milwaukee Braves.
Yeah. And
there they were, the Milwaukee Brewers then.
Right.
Milwaukee Brewers.
Fred Haney was their manager. I mean, when they went over in the Braves.
Yeah.
They won a couple of pennants, didn't they?
Yeah, they had a powerful team. Yeah. They had Del Crandall and Hank Aaron and Joe Adcock and Eddie Matthews. And I think they had Burdett. I don't think. I know they had.
They had Burdett.
Burdett and Spahn.
But I knew Fred Haney real well because he was a radio announcer of the Hollywood Ball Club when I was there.
Oh.
Fred Haney had to be 40s and 39s. He had a saying, rounding third and heading for home at the end of the ball game.
Oh, ball game's over, rounding third and heading for home.
Yeah.
You know, I talk about that Coast League. They had an awful lot of good ball players in those days, ball players coming up and ball players coming down. Do you think they could have beaten any of those major league clubs of those days, like the Browns or the Phillies? Or?
That's hard to say, Dwayne. I don't know. I think some of them could have. Seals had some good ball clubs.
Uh-huh.
Los Angeles had some good ball clubs. But I don't know. It's still a big league.
Still a big league.
And it's pretty hard to say. I mean, the Coast League had some good ball teams, no question about that. Because a lot of the older ball players, when they were through in the majors, would come down and play in the Coast League because the weather was much cooler and
trips were shorter.
That's right. And I'll tell you, it's hot as heck for playing back there on the East Coast with that heat and
humidity.
Humidity, gosh. And the pool grounds. a warm-up place was in left field out against the fence, and heck, just right down in what they call Coogan's Bluff, a hollow in there. You'd get up and throw half a dozen balls, and you were warmed up.
You were sweating.
They put you for a purpose out in left field where the sun was.
The visiting bowl.
Right.
The visiting bowl fan.
Right.
Yeah. Those ballparks sure were different in those days, that's for sure.
Well, they were old parks. The newer ballparks.
And they were more in the city-like, weren't they? More in the...
That's right. More downtown.
Yeah.
Cleveland had a nice ballpark. I understand they're going to build another one.
They're open now. They opened last year, yeah, Jacob Stadium.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right downtown. It's right downtown.
Of course, Forbes Field, they moved down to the Three Rivers,
yeah. Yeah, there aren't many ballparks left that you played in. Yankee Stadium is remodeled.
Yeah.
Fenway Park is there.
The only ones there.
And, of course, Wrigley.
Detroit.
Yeah, and Detroit's going. In a year or two, they're going to get rid of that one.
That has a short right field porch.
Yeah.
We used to warm up underneath the left field stands.
In Detroit?
Yeah.
I thought they had that huge, huge facade there in Detroit.
No. I remember warming up there in Detroit, underneath the stands.
In left field?
In left field,
yeah.
Of course, they had that short
Left field was short, yeah.
Left field was long, and right field was a short one.
I know you're right. It's really high. I remember it's really...
Yeah.
The bleachers go real high, because there was a shot years ago of Reggie Jackson hitting a home run, remember, and he hit it way up high on the field.
Ted Williams hit that home run in the All-Star game there. And was that 41?
41.
Stadium.
Yeah, 41. And he hit it off of your friend, Claude Passo. In fact, I was just reading an article in Passo. Of course, he's probably been asked that question 1,000 times about Ted Williams hitting that home run off of him.
Claude had become sheriff of that town, or the county that he was in down there in Loosedale, someplace, Alabama, someplace.
Alabama or Mississippi, maybe.
Someplace, yeah.
So he's still alive. I was telling you I read an article by him the other day. I'll bring that by to you, maybe.
Okay, I appreciate it. But he was a good competitor. Good pitcher.
Uh-huh. That's just too bad. You got two regrets. You missed the 45 World Series, and you missed that no-hitter.
Right.
By one tiny swing by Tommy Holmes.
Tommy Holmes did it in fifth or sixth inning, I'd say.
But looking back on it, I mean, the goods so far outweighs the bad.
Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. I just feel lucky that I was there. I mean,
yeah.
And baseball was good to me. I didn't make any money, but got to see a lot of the country and got to meet a lot of nice people.
Uh-huh.
Especially with in the Hollywood Ball Club. I was telling you about Clark Gable and his wife
coming out to the ballpark. Carol Lombard,
and every time he'd come up to pick up the bat out of the bat rack to hit, Carol Lombard would say, "Come on, young girl, come on." Of course, I was a lot younger then.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was a good-looking girl.
She was a beauty.
Oh, beautiful girl. And then I guess she was coming back to Gable when that plane went down.
Yeah.
That was sad. And then Bill Farley, I knew him, Gail Patrick, Bob Cobb, Eugene Paulette. Well, I mean, a lot of those guys, you personally got acquainted with them, you know.
Because a lot of the stars came out.
Bing Crosby, he was a baseball fan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You've hunted with Bing Crosby,
in his ranch, yeah.
In Elko County.
In Elko, yeah. He used to call me Big Lard.
Big Lard?
I was going to say something else. Oh.
Like Big Bud or something like that.
Yeah. That was it.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll wind it up for now, Bill.
Okay.
And probably not for now, probably for good. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, and I had a lot of fun, and you probably have too, and hopefully a lot of other people who listen to this enjoy it.
Well, I hope so, Wayne. It's been my pleasure too, and baseball is a great game, and you remember more ball players than I do. It's surprising. I mean...
Well, I always liked baseball. I played 3 years of minor league baseball and enjoyed it.
Well, it's a great game.
All right. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.